Representative Lynn, Representative Guttenberg, myself, Representative Gott, and my good friend Wade to my right.
Oh, they didn't have to go.
Representative Rogberg.
You got more candy down here.
And we got a lot of candy today.
Okay,
so we're trying to sweeten you up. We'll begin with House Bill 226, which we left off with. We held over for a couple of days to see if there were any amendments. We closed public testimony, and we'll open it up for committee discussion. Are there amendments that anyone wishes to offer? Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. I'll offer amendment number one, draft version I. And if the bill sponsor would like to explain the amendment.
I'll object for discussion purposes.
Okay, the motion to move amendment number one, which is dated 415 Bannister, I. There's an objection. Representative Guerra signals. No. Yes.
Okay. You got the votes.
My left or my right. Okay.
Amendment number one just addresses a concern that somebody who testified yesterday or spoke to us yesterday mentioned, which is they want the bill to require that if government release accidentally breaches your security, that they also tell a consumer that your security has been breached. So right now the bill just applies, the first part of the bill only applies to private companies, and I think there's no good reason to exempt government from the requirement that they notify a consumer if they've released, if they know that somebody's social security number has been stolen or their credit card number has been stolen or something like that. So that's all amendment number one does.
So we knew the cases of Nexus Lexus, and I obviously got that, and Choice Point. But have there been, do you know of any cases where government has had this problem?
I don't. But I suppose you could assume that in the future there probably will be a case like that.
President Rogberg.
Boom's trying to see. Well, Mr. Chairman, I was looking at page 1, line 7. It says, if a person engages in business activity in a state, Mr. Chairman, I think that's correct, but I'm kind of concerned about the use of the term person in this. In the drafting manual includes a business, not just a person, so I'm kind of concerned about the choice of words there.
Thank you, through the chair. Person is defined in the statutes to include business, and now with this amendment, it's also defined to include the state. So, the intention is to make it apply to businesses, frankly, that hold your personal information, your social security numbers, your credit card numbers, your bank account numbers. It's intended to apply to companies, and person is defined to include companies.
Mr. Chairman, the follow up. I was wondering if the suggesting their drafting manual is commonsensical enough to include that a person is a person and not some other entity that it tends to do. Would that be correct in your interpretation?
Should we start defining person to mean person?
I think it would be beneficial.
Probably. Probably.
A corporate person.
Representative Roper, do you maintain the objection?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I haven't had a chance to read this entire amendment, but there seems to be this intertwining between activities, business, and persons. So that's why I did want to put on the record what a person means in our Alaska drafting manual. But I see we even have a definition now.
I think we replace person, like people, beings with individual.
That seems to be a conflict with the statement of the witness down page 2, line 18 and 19 of the witness's prior statement, Mr. Chairman. I didn't even see that.
Representative Lynn.
I guess you could have person as an individual person or person as a corporate entity.
But not as a person.
If I may, a corporate entity is obviously not a person, it's a conglomeration of purpose. A person operating together, hopefully in concert, as a corporation, recognized as a as a person.
Well, not to confuse person
as an individual
with business.
God creates people. We create corporations.
Corporations and business entities are now considered persons, and people, usins, are individuals. The way I read this.
But my point, Mr. Chairman, our drafting manual just fouls the entire intelligence of the world here, making our laws almost unintelligible and unreadable by the general public. And it seems as if this amendment's just adding to that.
Mr. Roper, I would hope that over the interim you would work with the drafting manual personnel.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this amendment says it again. It defines person without including him as a person. Are we to continue this folly?
How many times does person appear in statute?
Right, do a search.
Millions of times.
Perhaps the sponsor could help us out here. His engaging legal background.
Epson Gira.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm enjoying this. So, Representative Rokeberg is right. At some point, we'd made the decision in the state to say person means things that aren't even persons. But that's how we use it. So the bill is intended, just to be clear on the record, to apply to businesses, corporations, persons, and governments.
It's not a person, though. Excuse me. The way you have it defined, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Guerra, the definition in your amendment even, I presume, relates to everything within this chapter.
Which is
new under your bill.
Through the chair, person in the law and in this bill means a business entity, governmental entity, and a person. A person who engages in a business activity. So
it doesn't say that. It says it means a business entity or a state, local, governmental body, subdivision, or agency, except for an agency of a judicial branch of the state government. That means lawyers aren't people either? Is that what this just said?
The rules chairman has a good point. I think we could probably insert that person also means person in the amendment at your will.
Just follow up on that. Why are we excluding the judicial branch?
They're not people.
Everybody.
That's what it says right here. I mean, I've just read it in black and white because he wants it part of the law, so that makes it lawfully they're unpeopled.
Is this just consistently with statute? I mean, my question was why is this definition of person, line 18, is this how it's written in statute as the definition? Are you changing anything?
We're about to find out.
Okay.
Actually, I think it's fairly consistent, but
yeah,
with the law. But that's how.
I agree.
What are we in here?
It's consistent with the rest of
45
statutes.
What title is that?
Mr.
Persons, sure. As you and I know them, are now individuals. As part of this amendment, we've deleted person and inserted individual.
There's a statutory definition of person, and the bill drafter was responding to a concern by somebody that the bill should also apply to government entities. They decided to therefore call a government entity a person. That was their way of dealing with it with the amendment. I frankly don't care how they decide to deal with it. You might put a comma at the end of line 20 on page 2 and say, and all those entities, and as defined, let me not give you the language. There's a definition in AS 01-10060 of person, which reads, a person is a corporation, company, partnership, firm, association, organization, business, trust, or society, as well as a natural person. It doesn't include government entity in that section, so that's why the drafter had to word add in government entity at line 18. You might add in to this amendment and as defined in AS 01-10060.
One might, but it seems awfully sloppy. Mr. Chairman, that would mean we have two definitions of person.
So, well, Mr. Chair,
one might have to hire a lawyer to figure out which definition you wanted to choose then. I hate to suggest that, but that could be the dilemma one finds himself if we were to pass it.
President Guerra, could we just utilize that language you just read and include governmental entity? That would be a definition that would apply to this section, this statute 45.
Through the chair, I think you could. I think the amendment could, you could do a conceptual amendment that says define person as the law defines person in 0110, and then say the bill also applies to governmental entities, and let the bill drafter then follow Representative Roepberg's concerns and write the amendment that way.
That meet with your approval, there, Representative Roepberg?
Well, just so we respect the individuals of this state, Mr. Chairman. That's what the drafting manual does. I've had this discussion in the past. It is rather absurd, but it's something we should be clear on.
We'll do a conceptual amendment, and then that will be all-inclusive. That definition plus include governmental entity.
Did I hear a motion?
Yeah, I'd consider that a friendly amendment.
That'd be a friendly amendment.
What was it?
We will utilize the definition in the statute and include governmental entity, which brings in everyone in that definition plus, I think, what the intent of the sponsor is trying to get to by including governmental entities as part of this. And then you can work with the reviser and...
No. No. I'd rather play with take my grandson fishing. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you maintain the objection, Representative Roepberg?
Was there an amendment to the amendment?
That was a friendly amendment.
Yeah. That was an amendment to the amendment? Conceptual amendment, number amendment to the amendment?
Yeah.
Well, I don't object to that.
Okay.
But then are we back to the amendment before us as amended?
The amendment before us as amended is back before us. Do you still maintain the objection?
No, I'll remove my objection.
Okay, hearing no objection, then that amendment passes. And seeing no further debate, Representative Lynn.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lynn.
I would move CS for House Bill number 226, 24-LS 0689, / I, with amendments and individual recommendations.
Hearing no objection, and the bill is moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Okay, well, next turn, the House Bill 181, with continuing education for the military. Representative Coghill is the sponsor. I see we have a member of his staff that will present the bill, and I see we have another member of his staff that will evaluate the member of the staff that's presenting the bill. Ma'am,
thank you,
state
Mr.
your name
Chairman.
For the record.
My name is Karen Litster, and I am staff for Representative Coghill. And you have before you a blank CS, and I'd like to just sort of start from the beginning. Sponsor wanted to...
Before you go any further, then why don't we adopt the blank CS for the purpose of having it before us, Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the committee substitute for HB 181. And I have the I version here. What do we got? What's the...
Motion is to adopt the CS for House Bill 181, version L, dated
version
415.
L.
Hearing no objection, then we have that version before us.
Oh,
please continue.
All right, thank you. This legislation was introduced to eliminate the possibility that, excuse me, a professional licensee would lose his or her license because of failure to fulfill the statutory requirements for continuing education while they were serving on active duty, and the classes would not be available. There are many professional license holders within our military services, and this bill is to try and give them an opportunity to not lose their license, and then when they come back to the, you know, when they're back in stateside, they would be able to go ahead and make up that those necessary education requirements. The bill wanted to go ahead and have the boards and commissions of the different professions be able to have that ability to waive those education requirements for some of the professions that may not have a board or a commission over them. The department would be able to then establish waivers for them. So one of the major change, which we appreciated in Military and Veterans Affairs, they did pass the bill out, but with the change that this was going to be for all active duty military. Initially, when the bill was drafted, we were looking at those individuals that were in the National Guard, Reserves, those types of, if you can, part-time professional soldiers, but it was brought to our attention that state licenses are held by full-time service members, and so the CS before you addresses that change and basically establishes all military, you know, active duty military would be given an opportunity to not lose their license until they had the availability to, you know, get their continuing education requirements fulfilled. It has a zero fiscal note, and I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Rubber.
Mr. Chairman, then would that mean that if you were, for example, a member of the Alaska National Guard and activated on active duty and sent overseas for a period of time, but that would toll? Is that the intention? We have to stipulate what branch of service or connection, even though you are reservist or guard member, you would apply, but if you were on active duty. Is that
through the chair, Representative Roekberg, that is true.
Right. So that's unnecessary.
So further questions for the member's staff?
Mr. Chairman, this means I have to re-up to get out of picking my broker's license?
Yes.
Exactly what it means.
They won't take me, I don't think. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I am qualified here to administer to enlist people into the military, and I'd be happy to see you after the committee meeting and pull up your hand. We'll ship you out.
Yeah, the over-the-hill Alaskan militia group.
The master's category.
See no further questions. Yeah. Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience here in Juneau wish to testify on House Bill 181? Seeing none, anyone on the teleconference line? Hearing none. We'll close public testimony and open up for committee discussion. Good bill, Representative Roekberg.
Mr. Chairman, this is a good bill. We've spent in this committee years looking after OCC licensing things and asking for more educational requirements, and for once we're backing off, but in the proper direction, I think. So. Mr. Chairman, if you'd like a motion.
I would. Representative Ledoux.
I move CS for House Bill 181, Draft 24 LS 0685-L.
Hearing no objection, the bill is moved.
With individual recommendations?
Individual recommendations.
Attached zero fiscal note?
Attached zero fiscal note.
Thank you.
Unamended. Now that we have dispensed with the two easy bills, let's go to the most controversial bill we have on the agenda today, which is House Bill 243. It is offered by the governor on behalf of House Rules. Chairman? Mm-hmm. Representative Roekberg, I see you're here to testify on behalf of the governor.
You're mistaken, Mr. Chairman.
Oh. In that case, is there anyone here that wishes to testify to present the bill to the committee? Yes, I think we have someone. Chairman Giard. Are you online?
Hi, Mr. Chairman.
Hi.
Sorry, I was muted. I was talking but muted.
Oh, we wouldn't do that to you.
My name is Kate Guyard. I'm the chairman of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, and I have just a few comments on the bill that is before you today. When I began or assumed the duties as chair in July of 2004, one of the reasons that I ran for chair, and it is an elected position voted in by your comrades who are the commissioners, was because I felt there was a significant number of issues that the Regulatory Commission of Alaska needed to address before it comes back to the legislature in 2007 with its for renewal of its sunset provisions. I was confirmed during the 2003, I guess they're known as telephone wars, when the Regulatory Commission of Alaska was last up for review. And so I was familiar with many of the concerns expressed during that time by the legislature about the RCA and frustrations that they had with the RCA. As soon as I became chairman, I began an outreach process to the public utilities that we regulate and also the pipelines that we regulate to find out more about how the RCA doesn't meet the needs of the regulated utilities and pipelines. That was a very humbling experience and also a very good experience. Many of the board members that I visited with and presidents said they'd never had a commissioner attend a meeting ever in the history of the RCA. So we made a big effort to make an outreach. And in response, the utilities and the pipeline companies expressed great frustration on any number of areas. If I had an ego at that time, I don't have one anymore, because we have a tremendous amount of work to do before we can come to you in 2007 and say, we have dealt with the issues that concerned you in 2003. Part of the reason that the utilities and the pipelines are so frustrated is that they don't know where their materials are when they come into the RCA. The RCA itself frequently doesn't know where their materials are. We lack systems, we lack management, we lack a normal ongoing processes that you would generally expect in an agency to track, follow, monitor, manage, and get the production, the work that we're supposed to do, done in a timely manner. That what happens is you see that in terms of complaints, and we don't know where our dockets are, we don't know what's happening. The utilities and pipelines feel frustrated because they have to plan their businesses around us. And so what is before you today was a group effort, really, between the utilities, the pipeline companies, and the RCA. We went public with what we thought needed to happen in order for us to be more in tune with what you want and what we want and what they want. That resulted in public hearings and meetings in December and January, and ultimately this proposal to the governor's office and to you to fund a IT initiative, several different IT initiatives that will bring the RCA up to snuff and allow the utilities and pipeline companies to interact with us in a much lower cost, in a much lower cost to all parties. The systems that this funding mechanisms will support are, I think they laid out in a letter that was sent down to Chairman Anderson. I can certainly describe those at more length. The 2% increase is temporary. It's for a 3-year period. It terminates on July 1, 2008. The goal is to bring in sufficient additional revenues to support the acquisition of these systems, put them in place, implement them, get them working, and then go back down to the funding level that we currently have. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I certainly do appreciate it, your support for this bill.
Thank you, Kate. I think all of us have received the accompanying letter, and it's pretty clear of what the intent is. Yeah, I'm pretty confident that we down here believe that this will bring about some efficiencies that perhaps have not been addressed in the past. So I applaud your efforts in working with the various entities that will help, I think, streamline the process that you're involved with. Are there further questions or comments to Kate? Representative Guttenberg.
Mr. Commissioner, over the course of the couple years that you're going to be implementing this IT upgrade or change or efficiencies, is there any way that you're going to be able to evaluate what happens each year and report to the legislature or the regulated entities?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, the utilities initially asked in the public hearings that we had for an advisory group to be put together comprised of various utility members. The original reason that they wanted to do that because they knew deep in their hearts that the chairman of the RCA really didn't have a clue what it was going to take to put those systems in place. They just had a lot of instinct. And so they wanted to be sure that what they were going to support, you know, had some grounding in reality. And they, utilities that participated in that advisory group, and we met in January, would like to continue, or at least most of them, I think, would like to continue forward. And we will have those parties and others involved. So we will keep the advisory role for the utilities and the pipeline companies active, and we will keep them informed as we go along. I think that what will happen in the legislature as we improve is you will not hear the comments, "We don't know where our stuff is." You know, the information will flow freely back and forth. We also will be able to, you know, respond quicker. There will be a general quietness when the RCA is mentioned. It won't be the most controversial agency that you have. There will still be areas where we make decisions that the public utilities are not happy with. That is the nature of our job. But if we make those decisions quickly enough, if we respond to their economic need for information on a timely basis, I think the complaining about the RCA will go away. And I will have served you well, because I leave in 2007, if when the renewal comes up, you do not have the wars or the complaints that you heard about the RCA. I believe that's going to be the case.
Thank you. Kate, did you say you're submitting your resignation?
Well, my term was really only 4 years. I accepted the position to come do the very best I could for the RCA for a four-year period. So I really look at that as my obligation to you in exchange for you hiring me, that I have a four-year term with you, and I need to do my best to help get the RCA situated, and then you know, I don't look beyond that day.
And Kate, will this technology that you're pursuing offer an opportunity to increase the efficiencies, or maybe online filings?
Well, we will, through the chair, what we will be doing is actually we will move forward into a seamlessly electronic filing mechanism. We no longer, with the exception of the very smallest unregulated PCs, they do not have computers and internet, and we will not require that everyone be electronic with us. But Chugach, I think, in the last rate case filed 65,000 documents. Those, you know, will no longer come in paper. And all of the very large utilities and the pipelines and the medium-sized utilities are all very excited about the opportunity to file with us electronically, like the FCC does and like the FERC does and like the bankruptcy court does.
Thank you. Representative Roberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ryder, well, I share your desire to quiet down the controversy. I'm not so optimistic about the level of success, even if you achieve everything you want with this project. I have a feeling that the controversy shall never die away entirely. But let me ask you this. What is the history of the RCC rate structure in the last decade or so? How many increases, and where have we come from, and where are we going here?
Through the chair, Representative Roper, I actually had a letter to you, which may not have been delivered to you yet, which talks about kind of the revenue history. And if you don't have it in front of you or it hasn't been delivered to you this afternoon, I can go through that right now.
No, that's quite all right. If you had, I just have the bill. I don't have the file in your other letter, so.
Okay. I did make a response to you on that. Basically, the history of the RCC has been at 0.8% of regulated revenues since 1995 through 2004. In 2004, it was raised 0.17%. That to 8.7. 1.7 of that goes to the Department of Law to fund the public advocate, and the RCA's portion was reduced to 0.7%. So we now collect 0.7% of total regulated revenues, and the Department of Law collects 0.17% of the regulated revenues to fund its actions. It's quite confusing, and I understand that explanation was confusing. It's better when you see it in writing. By and large, we collect about $5.2 million to fund our operations this year.
Yes, sir, I want to follow up on, does the Department of Commerce and Community Economic Development take any override or any part of the monies collected under the RCC?
Through the chair, we are assessed intergovernmental charges for our lease, for accounting, for administration, very similarly to, I think, the way that any government agency that is an arm of DCCED does. I can get specific information for you on that, but yes, the answer is yes.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this committee before has always looked at some of those overhead burdens with a great amount of interest. So I would imagine that this increase is going to be subject to the same kind of allocation to overhead and to the commissioner's office?
Through the chair, it is my hope that it wouldn't be. What we intend to do is those numbers are fairly fixed, and they will come out of our current budget, and they are not based on our total budget. They are based on, I don't know, some allocation formula DCCED puts together. What will happen with the money that we collect is it comes into our operating revenue rather than capital, and I did that intentionally. And we will then contract with a project manager and put out RFPs and purchase the systems that we need to do. The reason that I put it in operating, generally this would come to you in the form of a capital request. But because the total amount that we're going to spend could be $2 million or it could be $3 million, I didn't want the money to sit over in capital because that's money that ratepayers have paid. And if we don't spend it, money just hangs out in capital forever. If it comes into our operating account, the way that our statute and our regs are written, is any leftover money falls to the next year and reduces the RCC in the next year. So what I anticipated was an ability to collect the full $3 million that the utility advisory group said we may need. And then in the last year, if it's not needed, that amount will fall to the bottom line, and it'll reduce the RCC rate for the ratepayers in the next year, rather than having it sit in capital. So I will also follow up, Representative Roteberg, make sure that there won't be any additional overhead taken by DCCED in the letter I write to you.
Thank you, Kate. Further questions, Representative Guttenberg?
Thank you. I had some questions answered earlier today by the representative from the governor's office concerning, understanding that there's unknown software or hardware. But as far as what you're planning on doing, Are you taking into consideration a major expansion of Alaska's gas industry?
Through the chair, Representative Gutenberg, I'm not really sure that any expansion in the gas industry will occur during the three-year period that these RCCs are collected. So the expansion will probably not impact the amount we collect, if that was your question. If you're asking if our systems will be sufficient to address the addition of more regulated efforts, the answer to that question is absolutely. The system is going to be designed to be flexible to expand or contract as necessary with the regulated utilities and pipelines.
Thank you.
Thank you. And, Kate, we do have a copy of the draft letter to Representative Roekberg.
Good.
We will include that as part of the record. Representative Roekberg.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it's a follow-up. Kate, you mentioned the a $3 million budget, and I'm looking at a $3.9 million fiscal note. Yeah, I'm worried about the overhead here,
$900,000. There we go. Through the chair, Representative Roper, we really don't know what the total amount is that we will collect because it's based on regulated utility revenues. And so we make an estimate of we could collect up to $1.3 million a year, $1 million a year, $1.5 million a year, which is why the another reason why I put in that we were going to let the any amount we don't spend will drop down and reduce the RCC rate for the next year. If we were to collect, for example, because utility and pipelines are doing very well, if we were to collect $2 million in the first year, and another $1 million in the second year and don't need any more, all of the rest would fall to the bottom line and reduce the RCC. So we would not, you know, get rich, add staff, you know, do things that you don't want us to do with that money. So those are estimates, and yes, they probably do show that they're more than, because I've just made an estimate based on the projected revenues that we had coming in.
Further questions for Kate? I see no further questions, Kate. Thank you very much. And I've looked over the packet, and I see nothing mentioned about Baleen in here. So,
through the chair, I'm sure you're sick of me talking about regulatory Baleen.
Thank you again, Kate.
Yes, sir.
We'll now turn to Rick Ray Miller at Chugach Electric. Please state your name and proceed. Ricky, online?
Yes, I am now. Sorry about that.
No problem. Chairman. Please state your name, affiliation, and tell us everything you want to tell us about House Bill 243.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is Rick Freimiller. I am Director of Regulatory Affairs and Pricing at Chugach Electric Association in Anchorage. Chugach is the largest electric utility in the state, providing service to retail and wholesale customers from Fairbanks to Anchorage to the Kenai Peninsula. On behalf of Chugach and its retail members, I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 243. It provides a modest increase in the regulatory cost charge to allow the Commission to implement an information technology plan. Chugach believes this will be a significant productivity enhancement for the Commission, as well as for the utility that regulates, and it's well worth the increased RCC cost and the investment that will result from it. In our business, as has been stated earlier, we need to share significant amounts of information in order for all involved to be informed and to be able to make good decisions. Increased use of information technology can significantly enhance our productivity and ultimately result in lower costs to our members. Chugach is pleased that the Commission has established a working group of IT professionals from its staff, as well as from the utilities who are working on the same issues for their organizations. Working together, we'll be better able to ensure that all of these individual efforts can mesh together to effectively produce required information in a timely manner. By accomplishing that, we'll be able to spend less time producing information and more time addressing substantive issues in the regulatory process. So I urge you to pass House Bill 243. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Other questions? Seeing none, and we'll turn finally to Dan.
Hello?
Dan Starr, please proceed.
My name is Dan Dickgraff. I'm the treasurer and manager of finance and rates for NSTAR Natural Gas Company. NSTAR is the largest energy utility in the state. We provide gas service to over 119,000 customers in South Central, including 11,000 on the Kenai Peninsula and 20,000 in the Mat-Su. I've dealt with regulatory matters with the RCA and its predecessor agency, the APUC, for over 20 years for NSTAR, and I'm happy to come forward here at this time to pass on our support. NSTAR does support this initiative to update its information, for the RCA to update its information systems and to fund it with the proposed time-limited increase in the regulatory cost charge. We can see the efficiencies that the proposed systems will bring to the RCA for the utilities that it regulates. Those advantages include tracking cases and costs, researching precedents for the RCA and the utilities, making information available easier and faster for both the utilities, the commission itself, and the consumers, and saving on storage, paper filing costs, a whole bunch of just ancillary costs that we now experience. As a result, the ratepayers will save and get better regulation. I thank you for letting me testify this afternoon, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dickgraff. Any other questions? I don't see any questions for you. Is there anyone else on the teleconference line that wishes to testify on House Bill 243? Hearing none. Anyone in here in the audience wants to come forward? It's the last opportunity. Seeing none, then we'll close public testimony. Representative Roeckberg.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 243 with individual recommendations and attaches 00.
Motion to move House Bill 243. Seeing no objections, then we will move House Bill 243 with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
No,
or,
zero.
Or a $3.9 million
right.
Fiscal note.
Yeah.
With that, the bill is moved. Thank you for those who have participated today on the teleconference line, and there's no further business before this committee this afternoon. So, with that, we'll adjourn the weekend. Thank you. Good weekend.